from education to employment and everything in between. It's a clearinghouse for all things shale. It's the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier and Rusty Fender.
Good morning and welcome to the Shale Gas News. I'm Bill DeRozier, broadcasting via Skype on the Shale Gas News, and thanks to the magic of DC Taylor, we are on the air again this week. How are you doing, DC?
I know how to press some buttons and make some things. Hi, Bill. How are you?
I'm doing well. My brain stopped working a little earlier ago. You and I were discussing the endless possibilities of you and I existing in different universes and the different choices and things that we might have made. And, you know, I think my brain's a little on the fritz there. It's like when you fill up an Excel spreadsheet too much and you click at the compute and, like, the computer freezes.
Yeah, there's too many lines, too many cells. Yeah. There's too many cells open in my brain right now. Come back later.
Well, that's certainly how I feel, again, after this week. And you and I were discussing before we started recording that I spent the first half of this week down in Harrisburg, which isn't odd because I go down to Harrisburg quite a bit with my work and job and everything that I do. But what's unique is every 4 years there's an opportunity for a new governor to be sworn in. And this week, Governor Shapiro was officially sworn in, our former attorney general, now governor, after a what seemed to be like a two-year campaign, but a year-and-a-half campaign against Doug Mastriano, who's still a sitting senator in Pennsylvania. But the unique opportunity is to go down and be part of history, and regardless if it's a Republican or a Democrat or a third-party candidate, I like to go down and experience it, hear what they have to say, what's their message, their vision for the next 4 years. It's neat to see all the pomp and circumstance of getting the legislature together, despite the dysfunction in our legislature, especially in the House. But getting all of the row officers together, getting people from across the Commonwealth, because, you know, on days like this, I am reminded that Pennsylvania is, I think, the fifth largest state in the country.
Right.
And it's a large state, you know, as someone that's driven, and you drive everywhere, someone that's driven from, I'd say, coast to coast, but corner to corner, excuse me, that there's so many people. And there's a diverse population. I mean, we have 67 counties. We have rural and ag to industrial and downtown city, right? So just to see everybody descend into Harrisburg to celebrate the new governor is one thing. It was great catching up with a lot of folks that I haven't seen, a combination of, you know, just COVID or craziness with life-changing, things like that. But the bigger event that you and I were discussing beforehand was the celebration. So after the inauguration, everything, there are parties and events throughout the day, and it all culminates with a large gathering, really the celebratory party. And this year it was hosted at Rock Lidditz. I have heard a lot about Rock Lidditz. I'd never been to it. And it's this tremendous facility in Lidditz, Pennsylvania, about 45 minutes south. East of southeast, southwest of Harrisburg. And they had one of the biggest parties I've ever been to. I think they said about 7,000 people showed up to the governor's party. But it's this cool complex because if you're a performing artist getting ready to go on tour, you could go to this place in Pennsylvania, and they have a campus with everything you would need, from recording studios to tech support to even a venue like where we were at, where you could run through your show with a full stage like you'd find in any venue across the country. And I guess you can test it out and make sure the show works. They have set design building there. They have a hotel. They have accommodations. They have restaurants. Everything on this footprint.
Yeah, well, very nice. Yeah,
I got to send you a link to it, DC, so you could check it out.
Yeah, I got to see some photos. That sounds great. I had no idea that existed. I'm like central PA, for, I guess, is like kind of a whole different world from up here, I guess.
Northeast PA. Well, that's a good point. Yeah, despite the fact that they don't have the mountainous area that we have, it also is clear they don't have like the remnants of coal and industrialism like we have up here,
right,
down there, right? So it's neat because a lot of the stuff they're building down there and developing are not Or it's they're like starting from ground zero, if you will.
Yeah.
So yeah, anyways, this I'm going to send you the link to it, but I just pulled it up. They have studios, community, hotel, educational facilities. And I believe through our like drive in and talking with some other people that it's a 96-acre campus, state-of-the-art facility, custom fit to support all kinds of innovative productions. They have studios. The community part was interesting because they received money from the state. So I believe in receiving the money from the state, they had to have a community connection there. So there are events that they make available to the public. There are, I guess, a lot of different services they provide to high schools and colleges. Just fascinating. And I guess nice. It's everything, too. I heard rumblings that Taylor Swift goes there to prep. And then I've seen stuff that you have country music performers come through there, Broadway performers go through there. So that's pretty cool.
Nice.
And then, of course, being on the radio and you being in the radio business, we were chatting, too, about some of the guests who performed during the governor's celebratory party. Smokey Robinson was one of the largest acts to perform.
Wow.
Yep. I have to admit two things. I was a little nervous at first when he showed up on stage because I was like, I know who he is, but like I don't know his music. And he played for a good 20, 30 minutes maybe. And maybe other than the first song, I think I knew every one of his songs and his hits. So that was exciting. It's clear he has a lot of plastic surgery done because I have no idea how old he is.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah.
So that was interesting. And then the other two artists were – or the other two headliners were Meek Mill's, a rapper out of Philly, and then Wiz Khalifa out of Pittsburgh. And I guess I've heard through the rumblings that our governor, Josh Shapiro, is actually a big fan of rap, hence the emphasis on the rappers being there. So all told – interesting to be part of history, but it screwed me up during the week because I was down in Harrisburg for 3 days and still had all my normal work to get done and running around to do. So here we find ourselves discussing the shale gas news in the energy industry. And as we always say on the show, gas never sleeps. It keeps going on. And we have a couple of stories to share with you today.
Good.
Colorado's natural gas industry is pushing back on the gas stove study that sparked national debate. I think we were chatting about this, DC. Like, now you got to be worried. Eventually, they're going to outlaw gas stoves and they're going to show up in your house and take them away from you, right?
All right. I think it's new construction and all that going forward. But it's not practical, not in my opinion.
Not practical. And again, it's the belief that. Those who oppose oil and gas activity have – I don't want to say they've given up on it, but the science wasn't on their side to prove or disprove the natural gas industry when it came to the merits of hydraulic fracturing and drilling, right? The fact remained that early on in my career, especially at the beginning of the shale revolution, there was a lot of emphasis put on, oh, hydraulic fracturing is dangerous and it's going to contaminate – water wells and it's going to do this and it's unregulated and all that. But the reality is we've been hydraulically fracturing in this country for decades, I think like since the 1950s, and millions of wells have been hydraulically fractured. And there's just so much data to show that it is safe and it is regulated and the regulations that we have in place are working. So I believe the anti-gas agenda repositioned itself on the pipelines. And everyone knows pipelines are the safest, most effective way to deliver oil and gas and other products. But they knew that from an economic standpoint, if they could delay projects long enough through frivolous lawsuits and trying to get legislature, state and federal to change regulations and make it too expensive, operators would abandon projects on economic grounds, not on merits, right? Because we all know that we need more infrastructure in this project. And they've had some success doing that. I mean, Keystone XL is probably the biggest, best example. And we've discussed that at length through multiple presidencies now. And just the impact that's had both from the producer standpoint and the consumer standpoint. But another area that they've looked is downstream. And there's been efforts across the country to outlaw or ban the use of natural gas in any shape or form. So there are bans in place that say all new construction cannot hook up to natural gas. So basically, utilities, you can serve the customers you have, but you cannot serve any new customers in an effort to try and choke off the industry, because if there's no consumers, then why would we be building pipelines and drilling? And now there's been an emphasis on saying, well, you know, those natural gas stoves that we all love to cook on. I'm a big enthusiast for natural gas stoves and cooking on them.
Yeah.
Well, they're dangerous, too, because they might leak. And if you take every single stove in the country, and if every one of them is leaking at the same rate, then they're huge, big polluters. And because of that, we just can't risk having them. Which is ridiculous, because we've had those stoves for how many decades?
Right.
So that's what's going on here. And there's really been a big push, and some state legislators are trying to push bans statewide and trying to outlaw that industry. And again, just in an effort to curtail or choke off the industry. So, but Colorado's natural gas industry is pushing back. Colorado's already suffered some losses in terms of regulatory changes. The industry is struggling out there. But the oil and gas industry pushing back, saying that the study is flawed. Industry officials say that there are too many efforts to regulate natural gas appliances like stoves, air, water heaters. And researchers who authored the study are being paid for by anti-oil and gas groups. So the authenticity of the report is being called into question. But Nicole Schomburg, a friend of mine, a friend of this show, she's a senior director at FTI Consulting, and she advocates on behalf of the oil and gas industry and those of the IPAA, or the Independent Petroleum Association, noted that the study doesn't prove that gas stoves specifically cause asthma or other health impacts, a point seized on by many outlets across the country, in that the study is really merely suggesting that it could, right? And I don't know why everybody's getting all, worked up about something that could, but that's the same thing as saying just about everything we consume that's processed today could cause cancer.
Right.
Right. So it's just another one of those things. I can't believe we're spending all this time and effort pushing back and fighting on the fact that we have stoves. I, for one, am so glad that we have stoves and that I have a hot water heater and heat in the winter. And we're coming up next week where we have the potential of one, if not two, snowstorms across our listenership, our basin of listeners, D.C.
Yeah.
And I know everyone's going to be glad that they have natural gas heat or electricity powered by natural gas power plants to keep them warm during this.
Sure, sure. And I read somewhere, some commentary on Twitter somewhere, someone who I follow, a conservative-leaning type of person who says electric things are they're easier for the government to regulate, to monitor your usage. I'm sure going forward, and all the electric stoves you buy, you got to hook it up to your Wi-Fi, or else this feature won't work and this feature won't work. Oh, and by the way, at some point someone can poke their head in and go, why are you using that stove so much? Are you are you running a baking business out of your house by any chance? Or it could be, you got to get your cooking done on this day during these hours, or else we're going to have, a problem with the electric grid. So I hear electric appliances are a little easier to monitor.
Well, that's the smart thermostats, right? That's
sure.
Why those utility companies are pushing there. And I'm not saying that they're, I think they do inherently increase the efficiency of what's being used. I think there is a value there, but you do make a good point that if everyone had a smart thermometer and the power company needed to pull back, or the utility company needed to pull back, theoretically, it's probably coded in there for them to do it.
Yeah, sure.
Big brother watching again, buddy.
Right.
A couple of other news stories. Senator Joe Manchin from West Virginia says the U.S. should keep increasing oil and gas production to help allies. Senator Joe Manchin, a Democrat from West Virginia, someone who's made a lot of headlines over the past year and a half as being the lone holdout vote in the Senate on some of President Biden's key mark legislations, and then ultimately coming to the table after getting what he wanted. believes that we should be, as a country, producing more oil and natural gas to not only pursue cleaner energy solutions domestically, but also to help our allies abroad. Mr. Manchin spoke Thursday on a panel at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, to address the global energy crisis, including climate change and geopolitical conflict. He said specifically, what we're not going to do in the United States is get rid of something until we have something that will do exactly what we're getting rid of and do it as well, if not better. We will not leave ourselves in a vacant position, he said, as he defended the Inflation Reduction Act, the climate and health care bill that Democrats passed last year, and he was the final vote on it, saying that it was an investment in U.S. energy resources and that it wasn't directed at competing with European energy markets. And I agree with that. We should not get out of one business until we have something better to replace it with. But unfortunately, I don't think that's necessarily shared by his colleagues in the majority in the Senate or in the White House, realistically, as we've discussed many times, or at least the policies they're pursuing are not cohesive in terms of expanding energy production, which is just, again, just for what the United States has, for what it's already achieved and for what it can achieve both domestically and internationally, we should be doing everything to clear roadblocks, hurdles, and headaches to allow our energy industry to compete, to flourish, to thrive, and to meet our world's goals. And we know, and we've discussed on this program, the increased use of natural gas and oil produced from modern shale wells has also, as it's dramatically expanded over the last decades, has also coincided with a dramatic drop in emissions and climate changing, you know, emissions rather, I should say it that way, climate changing emissions at the same time, meaning they're not mutually exclusive. You can have one with the other. And the increased use of our natural gas will lead to cleaner environments, will lead to a cleaner worldwide effort. So we should be getting more of it out there, not vilifying it here. U.S. seen pushing for Russian oil price cap to stay above or at $60, this is according to Yahoo. The Biden administration is inclined to oppose any move to lower the price cap on exports of Russian crude oil, despite a push by some European countries to squeeze Moscow's revenues even more, according to people familiar with the matter. Russia's flagship oil, Urals, is trading far below the international prices, and the group of seven at $60 per barrel cap that came into effect on December 5th. The European Union agreed to review the price cap every 2 months, starting in January, with an aim to keep the threshold at least 5% below the average market price. Again, this is an effort to say, hey, Russia, we're penalizing you because of the war in Ukraine, but we recognize the world needs your oil because we're not producing enough oil worldwide to basically pick up where yours dropped off. So we're going to penalize you a little bit. And we always have the threat to go after you more. But we still need you, but we don't want you to benefit completely from it. That's how I take it, DC.
Yeah, sounds about right.
But I'm just curious here until as we're in the throes of winter and people are starting to, again, reindustrialize post-COVID, do people just say, well, we need a lot more oil, and because we, the United States, haven't invested more in domestic oil production and other countries around the world have chosen not to do it either, do they eventually just need more Russian oil? So I'll have to follow along and see how that all works. I guess the ultimate way to punish Russia would have been, again, embargoes and preventing any sort of oil exports to any of the allies and countries. But as we've seen before, places like China and India, places that are starved for that energy, are going to go to Russia regardless of those embargoes because they're market driven. And if the price of oil from Russia, even embargoed or whatever, is much cheaper than the price of oil from any of the worldwide producers, guess what? They're going to find a way to get it there. What if both sides of the ESG debate are right about U.S. majors' oil and gas investments, but for the wrong reasons? This is an opinion piece from Forbes. Now that the House of Representatives has turned over to the Republicans, the rhetoric around claims of woke capitalism have grown louder. One of the major beefs of the anti-ESG wing of the Republican Party is that ESG is responsible for the cut in U.S. investments in oil and gas production. At the same time, the International Energy Agency, by no means a liberal mouthpiece, calculated that in 2020, clean energy investments by the oil and gas industry accounted for only 1% of total capital expenditure. The proportion was expected to go up around 4% in 2021. These claims, when juxtaposed, led me to hypothesize that that's not garnered as much attention thus far. U.S. majors potentially underinvest both in oil and gas production and on renewables. I believe that the anti-ESG wing is partially correct that U.S. majors do appear to underinvest. However, I'm not sure that the underlying cause is ESG. The pro-ESG wing is also arguing that the U.S. oil and majors underinvest in renewables at the same time. I think it's driven by markets, DC. Yeah. And I think the markets always adapt.
Right.
Yeah. Right. You can talk this up and do all that, but the fact remains, I'm not aware of an instance where people, the average consumer, is willing to spend extra on the same molecule of gasoline or extra on the same molecule of natural gas just because it somehow or another has an ESG stamp on it.
Right.
When they could buy that same molecule of natural gas or gasoline or whatever, literally probably in the same place from another producer who doesn't have the ESG stamp on it, and it's more affordable or cheaper. And until the markets adapt, right, there people are going to continue to seek out the low cost energy source. So again, all of this overemphasis on renewables. This overemphasis on ESG, it's really just become an institutional investor kind of focus. And even then, I'm aware of some institutional investors that are backing away from it because it hasn't taken off as much. I think the majors can do it. They could go all in on ESG and whatnot. But I think they're just doing enough to make it seem like they are involved and engaged in this to appease both sides. But they're really following along with the market because, as we've covered on this show before, some of the majors have had historical net revenues and quarterly revenues, especially in 2022. And I don't think they're going to give that up or that opportunity to do that, to say that they're all in on ESG or renewables when it's clear the need for fossil fuels and energy worldwide is continuing to grow, not decrease, because populations are growing, our industrialization is growing, our need for affordable, abundant, accessible energy and reliable energy continues to grow. And renewables just are not in a capacity in most parts of the world, even here in the United States, to replace that, either equal it or be better than that, as Senator Joe Manchin said in the earlier piece. Last story here before we get the Fender's Fast Facts. DOE launches new $50 million program to help communities meet their clean energy goals. The U.S. Department of Energy stated earlier this week that they are launching this program to help communities across the country transition to clean energy systems that are reliable, affordable, equitable, and reflective of local priorities. The Clean Energy to Communities program, C2C, will connect local governments, electric utilities, and community-based groups and others who innovate and test new technologies together and fund it to help create these ambitions into a reality. And by helping communities reach their clean energy targets, this new program reflects President Biden's continued commitment to ensuring that every community unlocks the public health and cost-saving benefits of clean energy and support President Biden's goals to decarbonize the electric grid by 2035 and achieve a net zero emission by 2050. Again, if the fact that we have to invest even more taxpayer dollars into I don't want to say forcing, but into incentivizing these programs, these technologies, these efforts, again, suggests that people, the market, are just not willing to pay extra for it right now. I'm not saying we shouldn't make these investments, and I've taken a position on the show. I'm all about energy efficiency. If we can reduce the amount of energy that you and I consume, DC, as the average consumer, I'm all for that. And hopefully that'll lead to some opportunities. But again, throwing more money at this to force us to net zero emissions by 2050. I just think it's going to be one of those examples that when we get to 2030, 2035, 2040, depending on who's in the White House, that goal is going to get bumped back from 2050 to 2060 to 2070.
Of course.
And just how it is.
Yeah. Nobody's going to be like, nobody's going to be held responsible. Here, you told us that it was going to be, so we're going to punish. No, nobody's going to be held responsible.
There'll be no accountability.
Right, accountability. There you go. It's just people just throwing numbers around, going, "We can do this," and then several years later, "Hey, whatever happened to that?" I don't know.
Well, somebody that does not have any accountability, Rusty Fenders, joins us now with Fenders Fast Facts. What do you have for us, Rusty?
Thank you, Bill and DC. And this coming Monday, January 23rd, back in 1977, was a huge television event. The first time ever a miniseries was aired on the ABC television network. I remember this very well. Roots, the big show about Negro American black heritage, aired, I think, five nights. 1977 was one of the highest rated big events in television of all time. Roots, back in 1977. So we figured we'd look back at just some of the big events that had massive television coverage. We'll start with number 10. 10 is Here Come the Habibs in 2016. I don't even remember that.
No idea.
It was one of the first reality shows featuring an ethnic generational couple. It's pretty bizarre. Okay. Number 9, Rescue of the Chilean Miners. Remember that very well, DC, 2010.
Yeah.
8th highest rated television program in history, the O.J. Simpson trial back in 1995. Yes, indeed. I think everybody watched some at least a few minutes of that. Number 7, the Beijing Olympic Games opening ceremony in 2008. 1.25 billion people around the world watched that. Number 6, Roots, 1977. At one time, it was the 10th most watched show in Australian history, moved into number 3 position. That's in Australia. Number 5 is the MASH finale back in 1983. 105.9 million viewers for MASH. Number 4 was Michael Jackson's memorial service, the King of Pop. 2.5 billion people in real time around the world watched the King of Pop's funeral. Number 3, another funeral, the funeral of Diana, Prince of Wales, 1997, 2 billion viewers, 18 hours of coverage. Number 2, how weird was this? The same basic deal, the wedding of Charles and Diana, DC, 1981, 750 million global viewers are said to have tuned into the tying of the royal knot. That was back in 1981. And number 1, DC, can you name the most watched broadcast of any event in television history?
Most watched. I think it was, I think we got to go back a few years. Was it the 1969, the moon landing?
The entirely real moon landing of July of 1969, July 20th, actually. Yep. It was 500,000 pairs of eyes. Don't forget, there weren't many people with even television sets still in 1969. Now we have a TV in every room in a lot of houses. 500,000 pairs of eyes from all nations. Of course, it was done live at 11 o'clock at night Eastern time. So a lot of the world was, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning, did not get a chance to see it till the next day. But you're absolutely right once again. The real moon landing, Apollo 11, July 20th, 1969, number 1, and rightfully so, the greatest human event of all time, technologically wise. And those are the fun facts about the big events on television, DC.
All right, Rusty, thank you for that. Rusty's Fenders Fast and or Fun Facts here on the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier and Rusty Fender, and I'm DC Taylor. Please stay here for more. You've probably heard a lot about natural gas and how it's helping to bolster America's long-term energy security. But did you know that the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania is home to an abundance of natural gas? This formation is the second largest natural gas field in the world, and the reason why Coterra Energy is investing billions of dollars in the production of this valuable resource.
By doing so, we're helping America become a world leader in energy production. We're also helping to generate a stronger local economy by creating hundreds of thousands of jobs and paying millions in taxes and royalties to landowners, farmers, and dairy producers. Clean-burning American natural gas also helps our country reduce energy costs, improves air quality, and protects the environment. Here's to securing our nation's energy future and creating economic prosperity for today's farmers and the generations that follow. Coterra Energy, responsibly producing clean energy for all.
Yeah, the benefits are very good. The benefits are all day one here. The dental health, vision, everything is top-notch. Everything is very good.
Drivers wanted.
The 401k plan. We have a 6% matching program. The medical, there's a health spending account, and you could use that for co-pays. You could use that for prescription drugs. You could use that for anything just to help along with deductibles. And then you could put in from your paycheck, it's tax exempt. You could put in so much bi-weekly, and then that helps out too because it is before taxes. So.
If you're looking for steady year-round work with a company that cares about you and your family, at GDS, you will drive locally and be home after every shift. Get all the details and advance your career with GDS, a division of Cabot Oil and Gas, where you'll drive the newest fleet on the road.
The steady schedule, the 4-2 schedule for a driver, a 4-2 schedule is great.
Gas Search Drilling Services. Get the phone number at gassearchdrilling.com.
It's always a good time for Greenlee's Barbecue.
For all your meat eating needs.
Whole pork, ribs, brisket, chicken thighs, grilled chicken planks, ribeye steaks, salmon burgers, and beef burgers, plus salads and side dishes delivered or for catering at your weddings, company parties, and other crazy soirees, you crazy kids. GreenleesBBQ.com. Greenlee's Barbecue, Route 6, Tunkhannock. Look for the school bus next to Keystone Truck Caps. Greenlee's Barbecue.
Lindy Corporation is a pipeline and infrastructure company, and Lindy is proud to work in the Marcellus region, towns and cities, and beyond. Apply at lindyco.com. And remember, if Lindy wasn't hiring yesterday, chances are we will be hiring tomorrow.
Are you a truck driver looking to earn $1,000 to $2,100 a week with full benefits? Well, Eastern Freight Systems in Tunkhannock are seeking local, regional, and OTR drivers. They even have an oil field division with lanes based in both Tunkhannock and Pittston, PA. They're looking for motivated drivers who are looking to earn good money to join their team. A clean MVR with professional driver training or experience are required. Come join the growing team at Eastern Freight Systems by calling 570-836-8050.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier and Rusty Fender, and I'm DC Taylor. Last week, we started playing for you some of this program, 2023 State of American Energy from API, the American Petroleum Institute. You can find this at api.org. Here is some more of the State of American Energy 2023.
I'm Dustin Meyer. I'm the Vice President of Natural Gas Markets at the American Petroleum Institute. What is it? Where does it come from? What do we use it for? What role does it have in energy security for us here in the United States and around the world? And what role does it have in meeting the dual future challenge of how do we meet existing energy demand and rising demand while still simultaneously reducing emissions? Let's get started. In the U.S., about 40% of natural gas goes to power generation. About 30% of it goes to residential use, so think in your cooking, but primarily for heating during cold weather. And then the third would be industrial applications. So that is how gas in the United States is used. And natural gas is just an inherently much cleaner molecule. So when you use natural gas to generate electricity, you get about a 50% emissions reduction from the GHG side, from the greenhouse gas side, as opposed to coal. But it actually extends beyond that. We justifiably spend most of our time talking about carbon dioxide emissions, right? GHG emissions. But there's also a huge reduction in SOx and NOx and particulate matter. Natural gas offers a sharp reduction, in many instances, a near total elimination of those types of emissions. But it creates a very flexible, reliable energy market that ultimately, at the end of the day, we as consumers can rely on. liquefied natural gas, as the name suggests, it's the same molecule. It's still natural gas. It's still methane. It's just effectively run through a massive refrigerator that brings it down to a liquid form. When you move it into a liquid form, that means it's much more energy dense. That means that you can ship it on a vessel across the ocean in a way that wouldn't really be feasible if you just left it at a gas. We started exporting liquefied natural gas back in 2016. We are now the world's largest exporter of liquefied natural gas. It is very important to remember how we got here. It wasn't that long ago when not only was the United States a major importer of LNG, we were actually projected by many to be the world's largest importer of LNG. What we're looking at here is the fairly dramatic rise in exports of liquefied natural gas from the United States. You can see those started in early 2016 and have increased steadily all the way to the present day. Russia has always been the largest supplier of natural gas to Europe. About 40% of Europe's natural gas supply has always come from Russia. So it's a really bad situation. But what's important to remember is that it actually could be a lot worse. The reason why it's not worse is largely due to the role that U.S. natural gas, and especially American liquefied natural gas, or LNG, is playing in displacing that Russian pipeline gas. U.S. LNG flows to Europe have increased significantly. That fundamental shift, it didn't happen overnight, but it also didn't happen by accident. This was the result of decades of innovation in the industry. That's what enabled all of this to happen. That's what enabled the United States to now play the role that it is playing in global energy markets. We really do face a dual challenge when we think about the future of energy. How do we continue to meet existing and future demand for energy of all forms while reducing emissions in a manner consistent with our climate targets? Natural gas really does have an important role to play in doing this. And here's why. One of the largest success stories that we have is the emissions reductions that we've seen in the U.S. power sector. And what you can see is that over the last 15 years, those emissions have actually declined quite precipitously. And when we talk about renewable energy, we're primarily talking about the use of renewable energy in the power sector. So as wind and solar generation fluctuates wildly on a minute-to-minute basis, it's really only natural gas that can balance that electricity generation and ensure that these grids operate reliably. I think that many folks in the policymaking community perhaps are starting to understand is if you restrict and limit the availability and the abundance of natural gas, you really do set yourself up into a precarious position. Going forward, we're going to have to invest in new supply, in building new infrastructure. We should be eyes open about the challenge ahead. The United States is uniquely blessed in terms of our energy resources. We have to remember that while there are so many global benefits, the primary beneficiary of our development of our natural gas resources in supplying this abundant natural gas is the United States. It lowers costs for consumers. It supports a tremendous amount of job creation across the United States, and it offers tremendous economic benefits to local communities all around the country.
The industry is so proactive when it doesn't have to be, but it's proactive because it wants to be. It wants to do what is right by its communities and everything that is on top of the glorious rock that produces the wealth of energy. It is industry leaders, it is academics, it is community members coming together and noting, okay, is there an issue here? How do we all do better? How do we work together? And how do we ensure that innovation is always in the forefront to solving any burden that we may have so that the industry can continue to flourish?
Another thing to bring up with innovation, not just downhole, but also on the surface, we have been, as an industry as a whole, teaming up together. All the companies around have been meeting to figure out what is the best way to minimize and mitigate methane emissions and CO2 emissions. And so we are each holding each other accountable well above the standard of what the government is trying to push. And so I think that's another thing to bring up is that America continues to build, bring energy into the industry and into the world in the cleanest way possible. So I don't see why we wouldn't continue to grow that out here versus anywhere else.
I'm Dr. Aaron Padilla. During the 20 years of my career, I've traveled all over the world, working in 30 countries, and I've seen firsthand how natural gas and oil companies are innovating every day to improve our operations. There are thousands of groundbreaking ideas, technologies, and methodologies that have been developed over the past decades that have made the energy we consume today much cleaner. And the one thing that makes all of them possible? Curiosity. American natural gas and oil companies attract some of the brightest minds, people who are curious, people who want to challenge the status quo, solve problems, and change the way we work for the better. You are about to meet a few of the scientists, engineers, and innovators that are answering one of the most important questions facing our society today. How do we do more with less? How do we create more energy, but do so with fewer emissions and a smaller environmental footprint? Join me as we meet some of the men and women whose curiosity is propelling them to create amazing solutions and improve the energy that powers our lives. Here in Houston, Texas, is where our journey starts. Few places in the world are more important to energy production than America's and the world's energy capital. But what's happening here is just one of many places fostering the innovation that is fueling a technology revolution. We are doing more with less, leveraging innovation to rewrite how energy production and emissions reductions coexist.
The dual challenge that we are facing today is our responsibility to the people, so meeting the world's growing energy demands, and then also to the planet, which is to reduce emissions and leave as small of an impact on the world as possible. My name is Lucy Shia, and I'm the manager of the data and analytics team in our Gulf of Mexico asset here at Hess Corporation. My team supports the drilling and completions team, the subsurface, and the production engineering teams in the Gulf of Mexico. And what we do is we build out analytics tools based on the data that's collected out in the field and help them make faster, better, and data-driven decisions. As new technologies come to light, the tools that we use to execute those processes also increase efficiency. Then as innovation increases, you re-standardize that process using your new tools. And so it just becomes this ever-growing cycle.
The urgency of addressing our dual energy and climate challenge is clear: to produce more energy while reducing emissions. Yet the solutions are multifaceted. Lucy is just one of many to identify this challenge and approach it through a technology-first view. Across America, millions of men and women who work in America's natural gas and oil, like Vin and his team, are testing, incubating, and scaling new ways to solve one of the world's biggest challenges.
The Innovation Center is really a breadth of different projects across the energy transition space, whether it's with emissions management, to carbon capture, to clean integrated power. For example, with carbon capture, we're currently working on developing testing capabilities here in-house to validate the performance of metal organic frameworks for direct air capture from the atmosphere. We're an energy technology company, and that's the core of our mission.
Technologies like Lumen, they are now able to localize and quantify a leak within 4 seconds. And that is automatically reported to their operators so they can go and abate those emission sources. And so that's a huge improvement from what was done in the past. So Lumen takes an electrical measurement and transduces that measurement to a leak rate, which is what the operator needs to know. And there is a network of sensors that all work together to be able to statistically deduce where that leak is occurring.
So our sensor is basically a sniffer where it's attached on these sites and allows the operator and user to be able to detect when these leakages occur from these assets. Oil and gas is going to be a pivotal part of the global energy demand moving forward, but it takes investing these type of measures to take us to that journey to net zero.
While our future will be powered by these innovations made today, the question will always be, what's next? The challenge is huge, and the next idea must be too. Creating a workforce whose first question is, what's next?
So every kid, or even grown up, you want a job that you're excited to wake up in the morning and come to work. And I have the opportunity today that the cutting edge stuff that people use as trend lines and board meetings, et cetera, machine learning technology, we are truly using that in the data to make a difference in our industry, which is, you know, delivering energy to society.
You look back years ago on how we used to work and what people think of the industry, and it's just a different workforce today. Technology is evolving rapidly. With all the data we're collecting and how we're looking at this, at some point when you put all that together, the idea would be able to see trends and what's failing and what's working and what's not working, and then be able to predict before something's gonna happen or something's gonna release.
The amazing thing about our industry is how it's constantly evolved. You know, what we were doing 5-10 years ago is not what I'll be doing 5 years from now.
And when we look back, we'll wonder how we ever worked any differently.
Our industry is essential to supplying energy that makes modern life possible, while doing so in ways that tackle the climate challenge. Lowering greenhouse gas emissions, increasing efficiency, advancing technological innovation, building energy infrastructure, and more.
The importance of American-made energy is supporting the prosperity of my family, your family, and families all around the world. And we as an industry are committed to making that happen.
Here, here, and here. Solutions for more American energy with fewer emissions have been and will be created. Not just by one, but by many. Not hundreds, but millions of men and women working at the center of technology innovation, shaping a reliable energy future. The question isn't if, but when.
That again, State of American Energy 2023 from the American Petroleum Institute. You can find the full program at api.org. This is the Shale Gas News. Stay here for more. You've probably heard a lot about natural gas and how it's helping to bolster America's long-term energy security. But did you know that the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania is home to an abundance of natural gas? This formation is the second largest natural gas field in the world, and the reason why Coterra Energy is investing billions of dollars in the production of this valuable resource. By doing so, we're helping America become a world leader in energy production. We're also helping to generate a stronger local economy by creating hundreds of thousands of jobs and paying millions in taxes and royalties to landowners, farmers, and dairy producers. Clean-burning American natural gas also helps our country reduce energy costs, improves air quality, and protects the environment. Here's to securing our nation's energy future and creating economic prosperity for today's farmers and the generations that follow. Coterra Energy, responsibly producing clean energy for all.
Are you looking for work in the gas industry? Linde Corporation is always looking for good people. Apply at lindeco.com. Linde installs water lines, sewer lines, and gas lines. We're busy in the Marcellus region. Apply for your next career at lindeco.com.
Why choose Lackawanna College? Lackawanna College can give you the start you need. Spend 2 years earning your degree and go right to work earning a great salary. With 29 degree programs in competitive industries like culinary and hospitality management, petroleum and natural gas, and sonography, Lackawanna College can help you find your future. Visit lackawanna.edu for more information on how to apply or contact the admissions office at 570-961-7814. Why choose Lackawanna College? If you're looking to get ahead in your career or start a new one, Lackawanna College's Continuing Education Department offers a wide variety of certificate programs that are highly affordable and can help you get back to work quickly. Specialized training for workforce development and allied health careers is available, as well as the Lackawanna College Police Academy and the EMS Academy. Call 570-961-7813 for more information or visit lackawanna.edu. Find your future at Lackawanna College.
Environmental protection affects you no matter what industry you serve. Oso Wash provides the only certified clean solution you should trust for your vehicles. Oso is the only certified oil and gas industry clean tank washing facility in Northeast PA that's available 7 days a week. If it could get dirty, Oso can clean it. They're about 6 miles north of Tunkhannock off of Route 29 on Aldovan Road. 570-996-WASH and find them on Facebook. They are Oso Wash.
Welcome back to the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and I'm DC Taylor. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll do the job segment, look at some careers. Yes, plenty of careers available in the energy industries. We'll visit that shortly. First, time for the top five most read stories on MarcellusDrilling.com over the past week. Each weekday, Marcellus Drilling News locates and shares news from the Marcellus and Utica Shale. Over 50,000 people read MDN each month, so we use it as a barometer to tell us which stories people find the most interesting. MDN editor Jim Willis compiles a list of the top stories each week. So here you go, a summary of the top five most read stories on MDN over the past 7 days. And coming in at number five last week, Diversified Energy adds Marcellus expert to board of directors. Diversified Energy, formerly Diversified Gas and Oil, with major assets in the Marcellus Utica region and other regions too, owns approximately 8 million acres of leases with close to 70,000 mostly conventional oil and gas wells. The company has been adding shale wells to the mix too. By our estimate, the company owns at least 400 shale wells. Last week, Diversified announced that it is adding Catherine Katie Klaber as a non-executive director to its board of directors. Smart move. Katie is one of the smartest and nicest people we know in the Marcellus industry. She founded and was the CEO of the Marcellus Shale Coalition for many years. She currently runs her own consulting practice. Rusty?
Number 4D, Ohio School District signs a lease with Encino. It's a $4,000 an acre plus 18% royalty. Now, it's rare these days to come across information about the terms of a lease deal. Back in the day, when leasing was still going strong and there were a number of landowner coalitions, we would learn of lease terms and share them here on MDN. When we hear of lease terms nowadays, it's almost always a deal between a municipality or governmental entity and a driller, forcing the information to be made public. We have one such deal to share today. Earlier this week, the East Guernsey Local School District Board of Education in Loar City, Guernsey County, Ohio, voted to approve an oil and gas lease with Encino Energy. The five-year lease includes an upfront bonus payment of $4,000 per acre and 18% royalties for anything produced. The brief blurb below, which is all we can find about the deal, doesn't say how many acres the school has leased and whether or not there will be any wells drilled on as opposed to drilled under the school property. The entire blurb on that is at MDN. See?
Okay, here comes number three, the third most popular story over the past week at MarcellusDrilling.com. Familiar pattern, Freeport LNG delays restart again to the end of January. The Freeport LNG export terminal, located on Quintana Island, Texas, has been offline and not producing LNG since June of last year, 2022, due to an explosion. Freeport has changed its estimated restart date multiple times. In early December, Freeport swore up and down that it would begin to return to service by the end of 2022. Now, that didn't quite happen. 2 days before Christmas, when everyone was getting ready to head out the door for the holiday, Freeport dropped another announcement. This latest announcement from Freeport says the company won't commence initial restart of the plant until the second half of January 2023. Yep, here we go again. Rusty?
Number 2D, Zacks tells investors to keep an eye on these three Marcellus Utica producers. Zacks is one of the top investment research firms focusing on stock research, analysis, and recommendations. Now, a new alert issued by Zacks says natural gas is, quote, significantly healthier this year than last year, end quote. And because of that, it's high time for energy investors to keep an eye on all three natural gas producers in particular. They all happen to be top Marcellus Utica gas producers. The names of the three drillers will not surprise you. Zacks says it's time to buy and hold Antero Resources, NEQT, and Southwestern Energy. Both Antero and EQT are 100% focused on the Marcellus Utica. Southwestern, until about a year ago, was also 100% focused on the MU. But Southwestern has purchased acreage and wells in the Louisiana Haynesville and now splits its focus between the two regions.
All right, here you go. The number one most popular story over the past week at MarcellusDrilling.com. ET Revolution cryogenic processing plant explodes in Pennsylvania on Christmas. Residents living in the vicinity of Energy Transfer's Revolution Pipeline cryogenic plant in Bolger, it's Washington County, Pennsylvania, got a nasty present on Christmas morning. Around 7:30 a.m., residents report hearing an explosion followed by a fire at the plant used to separate NGLs, natural gas liquids, including ethane, propane, and butane, from the raw gas stream that flows through the Revolution gathering pipeline. The explosion and ensuing fire drove at least one family out of their house for hours while firefighters stood by waiting for the gas feeding the blaze to burn itself out. Energy Transfer is investigating the incident and does not yet know what caused the explosion. As of the writing of this article on MarcellusDrilling.com, the State Department of Environmental Protection was called and is monitoring the situation remotely. DEP personnel had been scheduled to be on site January 3rd to investigate. And there you go. The top five stories thousands of people read this past week on MarcellusDrilling.com. That is MDN, as we call it. If you'd like to keep track of the latest Marcellus and Utica news each day, it's easy. Just subscribe to Marcellus Drilling News at MarcellusDrilling.com. Click on the subscribe link. It's only $7.95 a month or $79.50 if you pay for the whole year. So it's like you're getting 2 months for free. There you go. It's time for the job segment. Let's explore careers in the energy industries. Brought to us by Lackawanna College, their School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Rusty?
Thank you, DC. We'll start in Pennsylvania. We're Talon Energy, looking for a production shift supervisor out of Bangor, Pennsylvania. That's Northampton County. TRC, looking for an ecologist, a project manager for emissions testing. That's remote from home 90 days, and then in Pittsburgh and Monroeville, a suburb of Pittsburgh. BlackRock Resources, looking for a distribution gas and pipeline systems engineering technician level one, headquartered in Wexford. Hydro Recovery, a water transfer technician based in Claremont. GDS, looking for multiple roustabouts, 10 positions out of Montrose. Penn Hills Resources, multiple roustabouts, 10 positions out of Kane, Pennsylvania. UGI Energy, looking for a natural gas construction and maintenance laborer out of Lancaster. Black and Veatch, looking for a process engineer, LNG, oil and gas out of Harrisburg. Oil States Energy Services, an administrative assistant opening out of Towanda. And PP&L, looking for an engineer and a support engineer remote from home 120 days, then based at their headquarters in Allentown. That's PP&L. In Ohio, Arterra, looking for a foreman for the natural gas construction division based in Toledo. Summit Midstream Partners, an opening for a measurement technician, it's out of Jacobsburg. S2W Contracting, they just posted an experienced gas compressor mechanic based in St. Clairsville. Amtech, that's A-M-T-E-K, Amtech Oil Incorporated, an opening for an oil and gas production and operations manager headquartered in Cambridge. And Encino Energy, measurement technician out of Carrollton. Duke Energy, an opening for an executive assistant level one out of Cincinnati. American Electric Power, an opening for a meter servicer. That's out of Coshocton. Nine Energy Services, looking for a wireline operator. That's headquartered in Marietta. Moving to West Virginia, Team Fischel, they have a job posted for a supervisor for the natural gas distribution out of Charleston. Hope Gas, a senior gas pipeline integrity specialist that'll be based in Clarksburg. Keystone Clearwater Solutions, a water transfer technician out of Wheeling. American Electric Power, looking for equipment operators, multiple positions based in Winfield. Shale Pro Energy Services, a well tender. It's out of New Martinsville. TC Energy, a repairman for their gas operations. That's out of Matthias. And also TC Energy with a heavy equipment operator. It's out of Cameron. KLX Energy Services, a field technician opening out of Bridgeport, and M Power, the letter M, M Power Resources, and an environmental specialist that'll be based in Fayetteville. And last but not least, in New York State, Lindy, looking for an electrical engineer based in Niagara Falls. Con Ed, an opening for a general utility worker out of Astoria, that's Queens. A gas field specialist looking for a hydro state tester and technician on a horsehead near Binghamton. NYSEG, it's New York State Electrical Grid, looking for a supervisor for their construction and maintenance, as also that's out of Oneonta. And then they're looking for a lead engineer for electric distribution out of Vestal. That's NYSEG. And Kinder Morgan, they have an opening for a pipeline crew leader based in Gilderland Center. And those, as DC mentioned, are the jobs this week, sponsored by Lackawanna College, the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. To Shale Gas News, we thank you all for making it possible. On our network of stations, hope to see you back here, same time, same radio stations next week for the Shale Gas News. For Bill DeRosia, DC Taylor, I'm Rusty Thunder. Thanks once again for listening to the Shale Gas News.